Good morning. We are back, Bostopia News with Evan George, to take a look back at the most recent Boston City Council meeting where they voted in an 8-3-2 divide for the creation of really a new planning authority away from the BPDA and one that is now within the city of Boston's government. And at first, I was a little hesitant to do this episode because I wasn't really confident there was going to be that much to chew on. It's incredibly important, this, and how Mayor Michelle Wu handled the police union contracts are going to be the biggest measures of how successful was she as a mayor. She completely failed in any of her promises or ambitions with the police union contract. And now the only thing left, can she accomplish or begin to accomplish her big goal of dismantling the BPDA? And that is incredibly important. Again, it's a term-defining initiative. And while all that is true, I really wasn't sure to what extent the Boston City Council meeting was going to be that interesting. A lot of the big political divides were eliminated. And really, I just view them as a very passive body that is going to just do whatever Mayor Michelle Wu wants them to do. And that was still true in the last cycle. They still had the votes. And by they, I mean Michelle Wu. But it was at least a lot more intellectually entertaining than what I thought this current rendition of the Boston City Council was. And that was until I listened to the hearing. And wow, it has all of the gems, all of the drama, some new faces, some new dynamics, but it's all still there. Wildly entertaining, wildly politically and intellectually fascinating. So I can't wait to show you clips from that in what will be a very old school Bostopia News episode. But before we do that, we need to set the stage, just talk a little bit about the BPDA and why this is such an important initiative. And to help me do this, I'm going to read from then at large Councilor Michelle Wu's proposal that was titled Fixing Boston's Broken Development Process, Why and How to Abolish the BPDA, published October of 2019. And in the background to this, hopefully you have kept up with the Bostopia News episodes. If you haven't, go back and listen to the two-part series that I did about Boston's liquor laws. Highly important to set the stage. But essentially, Boston in the early 1900s began to lose a lot of its own sovereignty and autonomy as a city. Powers began to be absorbed within the state. Then in the post-World War II period, we had this mass exodus of American cities. Cities started to lose their tax base, started to become underfunded in areas that were being designated as blight and slums. So with all that, reading from Mayor Michelle Wu's piece, the first government urban renewal project in the United States took place in New York in 1937. When reformers tapped new federal funding available for public housing construction through the Wagner Act of 1937 and worked with the New York City Housing Authority to make room for clearing away slums. So, in the midst of the Great Depression, we have FDR, we have massive new federal authorities to spend money. Simple Keynesian economics, in a recession, you use federal authority to basically pump money into the economy. Get people back to work, put money in their pockets, they'll start to spend, the economy will do its thing. And with this initiative and another in 1949, the Housing Act, essentially the federal government was giving free money to municipalities to basically clear away areas you want to get rid of, and then we will also help give money for investments. And what that looks like is the federal government reimbursing municipalities two-thirds the cost to buy the equipment to demolish property in what are called quote-unquote blighted areas, and then also for the private developers, give them up to 90% of the cost to build new buildings. And as a side note, and I think I mentioned this in a recent interview that I did around immigration, which I highly recommend people look at, without this level of federal investment, we are not going to solve Massachusetts' housing crisis. I'm sorry, I don't see any way around it. This is the amount of federal investment that it took to really build American cities and most notably to build American suburbs. You could not have done it without massive, massive, massive federal investment. And unless we get that, we're not fixing our housing crisis, period. That's a side note. Now, Boston, again, won some of this sweet, sweet cash, started to do its own urban renewal projects in the 1950s, and this was all originally under the Boston Housing Authority. However, in this era of, hey, we really want to start separating some of the economic decisions of cities from the city government, let's create a whole separate agency. A lot of businesses were the ones calling for this, and major nonprofits like major hospitals and universities in Boston, to create what became known as the BRA, the Boston Redevelopment Authority, in 1957. And this was created by both the Boston City Council passed it and the Massachusetts State Legislature. And now, directly reading from Michelle Wu's piece, by design, the creation of the BRA allowed the city to execute urban renewal on a larger and more destructive scale. The next neighborhood to face the wrecking ball was the West End. In the early 1950s, a tight-knit community of 7,500 immigrants and low-income and working-class Bostonians called the West End home. In April 1958, the BRA sent eviction notices to all of those residents. And by pure coincidence, I actually just finished reading The Urban Villagers, Group and Class in the Life of Italian Americans, written by Herbert J. Gaines in 1962. And it really is all about a study of the community of the West End. Sometimes, and this is pure coincidence, sometimes the stars just align. Now, this version of the book, I think, was republished 20 years later, and I would definitely highly recommend reading the updated version because, to me, the most politically relevant elements all come in the epilogue, which I think was published afterwards. And what it gets at is not just to the extent that the local community's concerns were just completely ignored. Michelle Wu's piece and many others go into successful resistance against urban renewal, but you really, like, you needed the numbers, you needed to have levels of political connection at this time. The West End, relatively small community, also because they used an at-large city council structure, their votes basically just got washed in the greater Boston population. They didn't really have direct representation at, like, the district level that we have today. But what this book gets into, again, primarily in the epilogue, is around the process of labeling what communities are slums, what communities are having blight, because the measurements that they would use really reflected just middle-class norms, not necessarily safety concerns. For example, under, like, a blightful designation, that could mean that you had massive rodent and insects infestation, but it could also mean that you didn't have enough closet space in your bedroom. Which, sure, who doesn't enjoy a nice closet in their bedroom, but that doesn't really deserve a designation of blight. And instead, very clear that they would create whatever formula was needed to get rid of certain areas for the benefit of, at that time, I think it was Mass General Hospital. Please don't quote me on that. It's all floating around the back of my head. But just major universities, major hospitals, and businesses that just wanted these mixed neighborhoods that really catered towards lower class people to just go away. Continuing back from the piece, in one area of the West End, 2,700 families were displaced to build 5 high-rise apartment complexes with just 477 new apartments in total. The scale of displacement and outrage became a national symbol of the overreach of urban renewal. And that's another thing that I always mention because I think it's so important, is just think that we used to have 800,000 people living in this city, and we basically have made it so we can barely squeeze in 700,000, and that has been after a long, long process of construction and development. We lost 45% of our population is something wild like that. And a lot of it, again, we talked about the flight of cities, but we just simply have less housing units than we did because we are prioritizing massive luxury developments and, more recently, lab space. But getting back on track with the history, then began a very, very long process that we're still in the middle of to really get rid of this housing authority, the BRA, to try to get it back under some element of public control. Starting in 1965, the Marin City Council approved urban renewal plans that would sunset after 40 years in anticipation of the 2005 expiration date. Michelle Wu's piece then goes back and forth to all these different renegotiations that they had in between then. Picking back up, the BRA and the City Council reached a compromise in 2016, granting the agency a 6-year extension with several conditions. And that really brings us to where we are now. So the most important element in why Michelle Wu cites that we need to get rid of it, why I want this agency to die, is because of how much it is separated from any real public control. Now, the process they use, and you're going to hear some of the city councilors talk about it, is called Article 80. And what that effectively means is Article 80 is just the process that the BPDA needs to go through if they are going to approve a larger scale development. It was adopted in 1996, and if a development proposal is more than 20,000 square feet or more than 15 units, then it has to go through this process. But as anyone who has ever tried to engage in this process, most notably to fight against a development, you realize that it really is just a checklist, that they're going to do what they're going to do, and you get to be part of a process but have no impact on the process itself. It is simply, yes, thank you, we have logged your statement, thank you for participating in democracy, we're going to do what we're going to do anyway. And the true ability of the BPDA to really ignore the city council, to ignore public input, is because they have their own internal funding mechanism. And I cannot highlight how important that is. That is the engine. That is the heart. That they get to have their own little cycle and system. Their positions are not contingent on the city budget. Their paychecks, the people who work there, come from this agency being self-financed. And this is the real lesson that you need to take away from Robert Moses. And the reason he was so successful in ripping apart Manhattan purely by his own vision and what he wanted Manhattan to look like and become was because of all like the different public authorities that he managed, they had their own internal budget. It was not subject to politics. You got to do what you wanted to do and rule as your little fiefdom. And the BPDA gets to do the same thing because they own land. And the best part of what passed recently from the Boston City Council was to transition the land that the BPDA owns to the city to begin the process of individual positions who worked for the BPDA. No, no, no. You now work for the city. It is contingent on the city's budget. You are now part of this political process, which definitionally will carry more democratic input. And how this agency gets its own money is essentially they just charge rents and leases for the properties that they own. But now all of that, or large amounts of it, it's still somewhat unclear, is going to be absorbed by the city. And the very mission, the very function, the stated purpose of the BPDA, which again in 2016 they rebranded, or maybe it was a little bit earlier than that because the BRA had such a negative connotation. Let me just read directly from you from their website under the Who We Are section. Paragraph 3. The BPDA is charged with growing the tax base. Let's just stop right there. The first thing that they say that they are instructed to do, their entire focus, is to build the tax base. That is why they prioritize luxury condos and development. That is why, in their minds, they try to just follow whatever quick market trends are happening. Oh, biotech is a big thing in Boston? Okay, build all the lab space you want. But guess what ends up happening? Reading from you, Washington Post article, February 20th of this year. Lab spaces boomed during the pandemic, then the experiment took a turn. Around Boston, a glut of lab space is just the latest example of how the U.S. economy zigged when just about everyone thought it would zag. Of the 6.7 million square feet that finished construction last year, 62% is empty. And I believe that figure takes into account Boston, Cambridge, and Somerville. But still, just having the BPDA as its own little autonomous agency decide what to build, and their primary focus is growing the tax base, and they're just following basic trends. Now look at what we've built, a bunch of another empty buildings. So that's just the first thing, the tax base. Let's see, what is their second thing? Cultivating the private jobs market. Great job there. What's the third thing? Training the workforce. What's the fourth thing? Encouraging new business to locate in Boston and existing businesses to expand. So we have the first five things are all for the benefit of stockholders, of developers, of wealthy people who want to have another luxury condo and businesses. Finally, the sixth thing they mention, planning the future of neighborhoods with the community. So the idea that the agency, which is in charge of all of the large-scale developments, that their sixth consideration is planning the future of the neighborhoods is so effing wild and ludicrous and dumb and explains why we're in the situation we're in. One of my other favorite headlines I remember reading was in 2016 when we did this big climate study and really it looked at the seaport and how disastrous it was building all this investment, all this concrete and steel and capital in this area that is just going to be flooded. And a member of the BPDA, very, very high up, in 2016 said, wow, you know, it really wasn't until this year that we started considering climate change in our planning. And that's not a direct quote, but that is 95% there of what this person said, that it wasn't until 2016 that they thought of climate change when just authorizing whatever billionaire wanted to build their new little playhouse. Absolutely wild. We need to kill this thing. And that is why I so strongly support what recently passed. And we're going to get to some of the drama around it and why some of the city councils that we like Julian Mejia, voted present. And I'll talk you through all of that. But let's start to look at that Boston City Council meeting now. And Shibby said that what passed does not kill the BPDA. But in my mind, what it does is it begins to rip out its heart, which is that internal funding mechanism. The transition of the properties owned from them to us is huge. And there are still limitations that we have because of the state. And that is why, again, you got to go back, listen to those two episodes that I did about the history of Boston's liquor laws, because that is really the history of Boston losing autonomy of itself. And so why do we have to keep doing home rule petitions? And we're going to get to why we still really don't get to have our own planning agency. So I have still some questions about how this works in effect. But let's now look at the Boston City Council meeting. This is from March 27th, and we'll have some explanations given to us. And we will get to witness all of the delicious drama that came about. And let's start with Gigi Coletta, because she presents really this resolution. And she speaks for, I think, 13 minutes, so I'm definitely not going to play you all of it. And something else that I'll remark upon later is there seems to be a massive divide within the Boston City Council between the adults and the people who are still at the child's table. Now, a little of that is unfair because a lot of the newer Boston City Councilors haven't even been 3 months on the job, and this is probably the second biggest contentious vote they took. Or it actually might be the most contentious. I'm thinking back on the vote to accept the brick funding, which it looks like they were all in agreement to do it. Even though the previous Boston City Council rejected it, they overwhelmingly voted for it. I think just maybe one person voted present in that vote. Anyway, this being the one that definitely the voting divide, how it went with eight people voting for, three people against, and then two people abstaining, probably was the most contentious. And so a lot of people just at the child's table, backbenchers. And I will again state that most of the people in that group are simply new, and so they're probably still just getting their feet wet. But I'll comment more on that maybe a little bit later. And Gigi, however, and this is her first full term, she was previously serving under a special election, is definitely at the adult table. She's very much in this fight. It seems that she was the one tapped to really spearhead this, probably because of the committee chair that Ruthie gave her. Anyway, she's going to now talk us through some of the elements of the bill, and I'll eventually cut her off because it does go on longer than a podcast is for, but she does do a great job outlining all the things, and she is reading from a script, and many, many of the other city councilors who speak today begin with reading from a prepared statement.
We pushed for additional financial transparency, and we got it. We're getting a full financial audit of all expenses and revenues from the planning department through the annual budget review. In a new addition, we're mandating a full financial audit of all expenses, uses, revenue, and income while the BPDA transitions a majority of their land, money, and people to the city. This was not explicitly stated before and is subject to the discretion of the executive and or the chief of planning. And now we are requiring it to be submitted while we consider the planning department's budget. We'll now be getting a complete list of assets and ground leases, capital expenses, and developer mitigation funds. And it mandates that all of this be made publicly available on the city's website upon submission to the city council.
And just to pause it there, so those are really the highlights as to the big takeaways of what this does, is it transitions the BPDA property, or at least most of it, to the city of Boston. Boston now gets to audit the planning department. We get a full inventory of all of their land and their numbers and their specs. And most notably, their budget is now under the control of the Boston City Council. And that is so huge, I can't stress it enough. She continues.
We pushed for additional city council and regulatory oversight, and we got it. We removed language that would have allowed the chief of planning to amend the purpose of this department and its divisions at his or her discretion. And instead, we added language that the city council must have approval power of any changes made to the structure of the department as established by the city charter.
And I'm just going to jump forward a little bit.
This means that we've given the requisite approval to transfer property that the BPDA already owns. To change the entire structure of acquisitions of property, we need a home rule petition to change Mass state law in Chapter 30B. To those making calls to embed in this ordinance, respectively, say that it is outside the scope of this docket, but it's within our right to file and assist with that home rule petition to change that.
And I'm just going to play you one final piece, and then I'll comment on what she just said.
Should we say that what's in the scope of this ordinance is mission accomplished? Of course not. There is more work to be done. The home rule petition still addresses many of the concerns we've heard from residents about the separation of the BPDA powers and the planning department. We are beholden to Section 81A in Mass General Law, which explicitly states that Boston is exempt from establishing its own planning board. Following the passage of the home rule petition, that is the next step to create this planning board planning department, and I am committed to embedding even more accountability, transparency, and oversight into the future manifestation of this board.
And I'll stop it right there. Thank you, Gigi. And the two big parts right at that end about things that we still need a home rule petition for, we still need state house approval for. One seems to be the process that we acquire land under the powers of the BPDA, that if we want to change that, we need the state's approval. But that second piece is that because of, and our general laws, Section 81A, for those who care, brings about the laws in terms of establishing a planning board. And I'm going to just read from you that first sentence. Any city except Boston and except as hereinafter provided, any town may at any time establish a planning board hereunder. And again, except Boston. Third time I'm going to mention it, go back and listen to that two-part series I did. The amount of laws that we have that give powers to every other 350 municipalities in Massachusetts, and there's a little section that just says, except Boston. Now, a quick look at the history of this is that this Section 81A was from 1936, and I'm just guaranteeing you all of this is still part of that Brahmin wasp resentfulness of the drunk Catholics that took over Boston. Guarantee you that is still why except Boston is found in everything, including this piece of legislation. Now, I still have a big question about how we're able to do this without the home rule passing, but I don't care. And I hope Boston City Council, I hope Mayor Michelle Wu, let's just start ignoring what we need to do under home rule petitions. And let's just basically do as much as we can to effectively change things. And maybe like the wording will still be on file in some way. But let's rip apart the BPDA like we're doing. Let's put the planning department under so much city control that it is de facto our planning department, even if on paper it's still separate. And forget doing home rule petitions. To quote the Chappelle Show, sanction us. Sanction us with your army. Oh, you don't have an army? Okay, let's just do it. Because we're not getting anything passed. They don't want to work. I'm sorry. Getting back on track. So Gigi has set the stage of what this does. And Julia speaks next. And Julia puts forward an amendment. And what most of the debate, which is going to follow, is under this amendment. And I'll let Julia explain what it is.
Not easy trying to get everyone on the same page. And I think I have seen you do just that in terms of really trying hard to ensure that all voices are heard and affirmed. And so I just want to say congratulations for getting us this far in such a short period of time, too. Like, I'm very impressed. Like, we're here.
Let me just quickly comment on that. So another big piece is how quickly this went through the Boston City Council. And I don't know if I clipped it or not from what Gigi said, but this whole thing was 17 hours. Everything that the Boston City Council did in terms of, you know, their official duties to review this proposal, all of it logged up to 17 hours, which is incredibly fast. And Julia's, that's a quick little slight. And that is what Erin Murphy and Ed Flynn start to run on, is that maybe we can just keep hammering that this was done too quickly, we need more time, because they don't want this to happen. And they know that if you draw it out, you might be able to delay and to get one or two more counselors that are currently on Team Wu to switch sides. And so the strategy of delay, delay, delay becomes very apparent. And now, Julia, pick us back up with the amendment.
So that's great. I would like to introduce a friendly amendment. For those folks who know, we have been during working sessions, public hearings, we've been hearing from our constituents about the need for community oversight and a real way for accountability. So I would like to offer a friendly amendment. And before I move forward, just want to make sure that I could bring it onto the floor.
And there's some Robert Rules shenanigans, which, oh, that plays a huge part later. I'm just going to try to pick it up to where Julia explains the amendment.
Understand that we're going to be transferring millions of dollars. We're going to be transferring a department into the city. And there's a lot of uncertainty. And also with oftentimes, you know, good reason that people don't trust government. And so what we're doing is transferring a department, and the boss of that department is going to be the mayor, right? The city council, right now is the composition of it, right? We're going to be mandated and we're going to be given an opportunity to have a voice in these things. But we know how politics works, right? Is that we need to have an independent voice, which is one of the reasons why I am advocating to have an independent oversight committee that gives us an opportunity to really be the checks and balances around the decisions that are being made. Time and time and time again, we have heard from community that they are not being heard. And this gives us an opportunity with an ordinance that already is going to reform the BPDA. This gives us an opportunity to give us an insurance that community voice is going to remain grounded in affirming them in the process. And I don't feel comfortable voting on the ordinance as is without fighting one last time to give people a voice.
Okay, so let me try to explain to my understanding what this would do. Julia wants to create basically a separate, independent, and I know the terminology does matter, but I'm going to just use it loosely. I'm going to say independent committee. Even though, again, and this gets into it, it's like, oh, well, it's not supposed to be a committee. It's supposed to be a board. Oh, it's not supposed to be a board. But I'm using that. This isn't like how to actually print this into Robert's Rules in accordance with the city charter. I'm just talking to you. So this would create an independent commission, probably filled with community members. Who gets to pick who sits on it would be very, very important, because obviously you can stack these things. But to have a separate apparatus that people can go to, that they can have their own powers, maybe even have subpoena powers to hold accountable this planning agency. And so it would be almost a section removed from the Boston City Council, from the mayor, and have this third body that probably will not have votes in terms of allowing certain things, but would operate as a separate commission to really hammer what is happening. And the reason Julia wants this and the reason Michelle Wu doesn't is because that'll just be a committee that the media will get to listen to and highlight any friction that is happening. And without it, all you then have is really the Boston City Council, and that is just another apparatus that everyone understands is just political. Whereas this other commission, in Julia's eyes and also in mine, I definitely would have voted for this, would just be another way to highlight, to put light on the development process of Boston. And it would be used, in its best case, again, if it wasn't stacked in a way that just was going to be a rubber stamp, to pressure the planning board, to pressure the Boston City Council, and to pressure the mayor to get the types of development that we need. And that is what Julia is putting forward. And you can see in it this still this tension between the city council and the executive, which should exist, which must exist. People put this as a negative. No, no, no. This is how this process is supposed to work. And so Julia is trying to create a check on the mayor. Now, this is always personalized because, you know, we know who sits on the Boston City Council. We know who the mayor is. But it sets dynamics for years, if not decades, down the future. We don't know the personnel. And that is why this is these type of things are so important. And it's been my biggest knock on Michelle Wu is that she is really not setting up a framework which is going to be for Boston's benefit in the long term. She's just doing what every other politician does, which is to increase your own power in the short term. And there was now some back and forth, Gigi saying, oh, we actually don't need a whole separate thing. We have a human rights committee here, and they can be the ones who do it. And Julia and Tanya rightfully point out that that is not sufficient to just focus on things involving housing development. It's just some catch-all committee that really doesn't have any weight to it. This new committee would have weight. But now we hear from John Fitzgerald, my city councilor. And I have met with him, I think, once. We had a lovely chat for maybe 30 to 40 minutes at some function. I'll have to do a deep dive into him and the new people soon. But John is also at the adults table. Not only, I'm going to actually just do two quick comments, two quick fit checks. Obviously, I don't normally do that because I think it would be highly inappropriate. However, I will say, Julia, crushing it with the beret. Thank you for what you're doing. For hat advocates everywhere, we need to destigmatize hat and headwear. They can be professional. We can wear them in professional settings. Thank you for, again, what you do for hat justice. Looks great. And also, John Fitzgerald, I disagree with you politically. Killing the suit. Looks great. I think I have the same color suit. I also like the handkerchief thing. I think it has a more official name, but, you know, the little, like, pocket square thing. Looks sharp. But let's hear John Fitzgerald's complaints against not just the amendment, even, but the entire resolution itself to demolish the BPDA, because guess what? John Fitzgerald used to work there.
Having literally grown up in this agency for almost 18 years, there's a fundamental philosophy which I can just not look past, even with the amendments that were put in. From participating in and representing, from learning and growing both personally and professionally, I've learned to understand just how important this agency is as constructed to the well-being of our city. From planning to growing the tax base to supporting many other departments behind the scenes in so many ways, to the robust community process and to guiding who we are and what this city looks like for years to come.
Just wanted to make sure you heard the growing the tax base part, led with that.
But again, I bring it back to the two fundamental questions I asked at the first hearing that Chairwoman Coletta also referenced, is the why now and what do we get out of this transfer that the agency cannot currently do as it exists today. If you remember, the answers to those questions in that first hearing were as to why now. It is always the right time to do the right thing, and the mayor ran on it. The first part I see is subjective. The second part, I do not see as reason enough to rush a vote here to make sure that this transfer takes place. It is a noble deed that the mayor ran on it. However, I don't think that the nobility of it should be reason enough for us to say that this moves on.
Now, there's also a constant back and forth to try to answer those two questions. Why now? What do we get out of it? Gigi just keeps fighting for it. But I want you to hear another comment that John makes.
The question is, what do we get out of this? And the answer at the first session was, it will gain trust in the community. I assure you, after 18 years of doing development community processes, that it will not gain trust in the community, okay? We will have the exact same problems, but we will just have moved it to a different entity. Folks only care about not the planning process so much as, are you going to build and impact my quality of life? No matter how much planning we put into that, when it comes down to that constituent in your district, you can call this department whatever you want to call it. They're going to say, I hate that department because they are proposing something that's going to affect my quality of life.
Now, that is 1,000% true. I mean, with an asterisk. What he essentially is getting at is true. Because people are not going to look at it or even know that really this process happened, that the BPDA took this and moved it over here, or that the city of Boston now has this control over the planning department where previously it didn't. What they ultimately care about is what is getting built, how does it impact their quality of life, for the better or for the worse. For most people, again, this all goes back to parking. And it is just so striking to have someone like John in that chair now versus Frank Baker, because they're going to vote the same, and that ultimately is all that matters. But just having someone who is more intelligent, I just think is refreshing versus, you know, someone like Frank, who we got a lot of comedic value out of, but, you know, didn't really have any sort of like intellectual coherence. So I do appreciate that, though that doesn't really get anything from me except for, you know, maybe a little like a quick thumbs up. But if you vote the same, that's all that matters. I don't care if you are smarter in your bad votes. That doesn't really mean anything. But where he's wrong in that, and why I said with an asterisk, is that having it under the city's purview, particularly their budget, now means we get to take it out on the city councilors. We put the pressure on them. Whereas before, it was out of their hands, a lot of this large-scale development. They just got to testify the same way that I do. And maybe I'm sure that carries a little bit more weight, but now when they control the purse strings, ooh, does what they have to say about particular developments now carry a lot of weight. And I believe the planning board that is going to be absorbed within the city, its structure will remain the same. It is a 5-person body. The mayor picks 4. The governor picks 1. I don't think that's changing in this current structure, because I think some parts of that, again, we might need a home rule petition to. But if your salary is contingent on what the city councilors say, yeah, those votes are going to swing with, again, their own paychecks. So it will have more of a democratic process. Liz Brearden then speaks. She brings up the West End and just how disastrous that was. I already gave you a little bit of that history. Now, Ed Flynn then speaks next, and he's trying to make it sound like we didn't take into account labor's view on this, particularly people of color and women in labor. It's very clear he didn't prepare at all, and he just was kind of scrambling for something to say as a negative to why he doesn't want to vote for this. Aaron Murphy, who's smarter than him, picks up on, oh, it's that this process was rushed, it went too quick, that is the lane. And then Ed Flynn also like figures out, oh, that's the right tactic, and goes about it. And again, this was also part of my concern with looking back at the Boston City Council, is there was never much to Ed Flynn, you know, definition of a guy who got a position because everyone liked his father. And Erin Murphy, in my mind, has 1 foot out the door. She wants that do-nothing clerk job so she can just collect a good paycheck and out of the public eye and, you know, sit back and relax. But they both keep trying to push for this delay tactic. Now, the next, you know, bit of drama that unfolds is when Benjamin Weber speaks. And again, he is Team Wu. She endorsed him. I could have already told you how he was going to vote on it. But he brings something up, a little echo, almost to define why he ran in the first place. And just because I keep placing people on the adult table and the kid table, Benjamin Weber, despite being a new counselor, is sitting with the adults. He He speaks multiple times on this hearing to try to get his points and messages across. He is at least fighting and articulating. He is entering the arena. He's just not sitting back. But let's hear that comment from Ben that I wanted to weigh in on.
You know, I think it deserves a thoughtful response for, you know, explaining what my thinking is. You know, I think we both agree that communities haven't felt heard in this city for too long. And, you know, what may have been a good idea in 1960, you know, we definitely have a long track record of what an agency without community input has done for our city and to our city. And it's, I think this agency has been responsible for a lot of the inequities that we see. You know, we have a housing shortage, we have heat islands, we have food deserts. You know, we've got a beautiful new seaport with no affordable housing. And I think, you know, we are in complete agreement that we need a change. When I ran for this position, I heard a lot from the community that they felt like the city council wasn't working, you know, whether that was correct or not. That's been the perception. And what I've seen in this process is a city council that works. And I have to commend Chair Coletta for her hard work on this, the work with the administration and all the city councilors. We've met for many hours on this.
All he heard while running was how dysfunctional the city council was. And he even puts a little parenthesis on that, whether or not that was true or just perception. I want you to hear Julia's comment, and then I'll weigh in.
I love this. I am so proud of everyone here. Claire, shout out to you. I know Neil. I see y'all out here hustling on your votes. I just really want to just commend all of my colleagues for their work.
And something you can hear, and, you know, she's charming and clever, just, you know, talking about, you know, hustling, getting all your votes. You can see Erin Murphy just like with the biggest grin next to her, because Julia has a level of exasperation or frustration that I think really does come across in this Boston City Council meeting, that she knows that Michelle Wu has all the votes needed, that they are just doing a quick performance, and she is just so both angry and frustrated at this process. And multiple times during the city council hearing, she keeps saying, I just want people who's listening to know what's happening. I just want people watching this to know what's really happening. And she is really, in some ways, just on her own. I mean, I mentioned in a different city council recap or whatever, probably 2 months ago, that they were going to try to put Tanya and Julia just against each other and let them publicly fight. And Tanya unnecessarily does take a big dig at Julia, who, again, is just fighting and fighting and fighting to keep trying to stress that this is, in some ways, an undemocratic process because all of the votes are locked up. I mean, that is just kind of how it works, but that they are just rejecting any chance to allow the community to have more input, and the city councilors are really, you know, the ones that frame themselves as progressive or liberal are really just ignoring that because Mayor Michelle Wu doesn't want it. And Tanya states that openly. But wait, sorry, I'm getting sidetracked. I will bring that up. Listen to Julia's response to what Ben just said, that about, you know, the dysfunction of the previous city council and just how much better things are in this current iteration.
And I just want everyone to who's paying attention and listening and watching democracy at work, just so that we see how things happen or don't happen. So now you get to see how all things play out here in the city council. And I would have to say that contrary to popular belief, the council that was in place previously actually managed to get a lot of things done. We fought for participatory budget. We passed an elected school committee. We did a lot of disruptive things, which is why so many of us were targets. And so I reject any notion that we were a dysfunctional council because...
And one, fantastic. I wrote an entire op-ed on it that they were actually incredibly successful. And it was because all of the things needed either state house approval or vetoed by the mayor that there wasn't just any big policies that were done and the things that they did manage to do, like stop the BRIC funding, just got overturned in this current iteration. And I believe it was over 50 negative articles just about Kendra that either led with her or referenced her in terms of the dysfunction of the Boston City Council in the, 2 months lead up before the preliminary. Very much a media narrative about the quote-unquote chaos and dysfunction, which is why Ben Weber could say, when I was on the doors, it's all I heard, you know, whether or not that was perception or not. Absolutely taking advantage of a media narrative to get rid of those loud left voices into someone who might be able to present themselves as having the same policies, but then look at that, watch how they vote, look at who they follow. Anyway, fantastic job, Julia. But picking up on the thought that I was mentioning, Tanya explicitly stating, why isn't this community board part of the process? Let me play you that now.
With you. And in terms of the community advisory board idea has not been explored at all. Like I spoke with the chair, Councilor Coletta, in terms of the idea, and we went back and forth. I offered some language on metrics for equity, and we talked about some of this. And then in the working session, then it was Councilor Coletta then responded that the administration had pushed back and pushed back and pushed back and does not want this. And so therefore, there had to be a middle ground in order for us to be productive in some way with this amendment. So,
and I always appreciate that Tanya just says it like, oh, Gigi told me that the administration doesn't want this, so we're not going to fight for it. Just so explicit, helps cut through all the things. I mean, it's not too hard to figure out, but I always appreciate the directness that Tanya brings to just explaining what is happening. And a little bit later, I won't play it for you, but Tanya does a very unnecessary hit on Julia, because Julia keeps getting up to the mic, keeps, you know, pressing the button to speak, because she just keeps fighting. She keeps just, you know, reemphasizing people like need to understand what's happening. We are just moving past any really like formal community input on this process. This was rushed. It was 17 hours. We should delay. There's a lot of Robert Rule shenanigans, which now goes on where once Julia's amendment vote fails, and for the record, I would have voted for the amendment. Absolutely. It fails. And actually, I'll just let you hear from her own words. Here's what Julia says right to the lead up of the vote on her amendment.
Roll call vote.
It's a motion.
Question. A process question. Right? So that I understand, and for those who are watching, so that everybody understands what's at play here. We are going to move forward with a vote without giving us an opportunity.
On your amendment.
On my amendment, right? We're moving forward on a vote on my amendment, understanding that we have yet to really give it the time and dedication that it looks like for us to have a formal community oversight process. And we are voting to reject community voice because my amendment was not written in a way that we can accept it. And I am asking for an opportunity for us to get to a place in which we believe community will have some sort of oversight. So I want to be really clear for those who are watching what it is that we're all signing up for. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Mejia.
And how these votes go is Tanya and Worrell vote present. Little unclear why Tanya did so. I think she does explain it, but it still really wasn't that sensical to me. And Julia and Erin Murphy vote yes. And again, Erin Murphy, politically getting smarter and smarter, but she wants the clerk job. I say let her have it. I don't really care. I'd rather someone else try to take up that conservative wing, especially after the most recent votes. And so now begins a lot of Robert Rule shenanigans, where now that the amendment has failed, Julia tries to put forward some Robert Rule's motion to delay this vote. And again, Erin Murphy jumps on it. Ed Flynn jumps on it. Fitz would have supported it. There's a lot of back and forth with the clerk and, you know, the guy who explains the Robert Rules. Rootsy, after the process, says that we are going to do like an internal review and we will make a published statement about like, did we actually follow it correctly? But because, you know, it has to do with like, well, we are currently considering this motion. We cannot do a motion to delay. All we can do is like vote on this resolution. And it just gets into a lot of shenanigans about whether or not you can delay. Ultimately, the delay vote fails because, again, they already have the votes. Michelle Wu already has the votes to pass this. And just because I referenced it multiple times, I will play for you, you know, Tanya's unnecessary hit on Julia. Though, just to finish the thought, we do hear from the other counselors, Sharon, Worrell, Henry, Enrique, and this really is, you know, the child's table. They just read a quick, prepared statement. They don't jump in. They don't fight. They don't really make any of their points across. They just all say a very generic, you know, we need to fix planning in Boston. No, this is not perfect. Yes, we need more community input. But this is a good step in the right direction. They all more or less just say the same thing. And I will give, you know, some consideration that they are new. They haven't been there for 3 months, though Sharon has sat on this for longer. You know, but she does seem like a little out of her element. Brian Worrell, still really waiting for him to get some passion to fight for some things. I don't know if he has it in him. I don't know if he cares enough to do it. I don't know if there are some things or if he's just, you know, playing politics, not going to show his hand unless he needs to. I don't know. I would just like to see and hear him fight more. Enrique Pepin does something that I haven't really seen any city councilor do, which is when he makes the comment, like, for the people watching, he then looks at the camera. So he then directly is staring at you while you watch. And I've never seen a Boston city councilor do that. I can't determine if I like it or not, but I definitely thought it was funny how, you know, he breaks the fourth wall and just stares at the camera. But finally, here is Tanya's hit on Julia. And it follows Julia, you know, kind of making a statement of like, I am going to grab this mic as often as I can. I'm going to get my voice out there because I deserve it or because the people deserve a say, you know, something to that extent.
OCD, and I have to make corrections. To my colleague, you can't actually soak up the time. The rules only will limit you, and our president is actually being gracious. And so unless there's like a clarification on like an order specifically to rules, you can say point of order or, you know, clarification. But just to clarify here, that is not correct. So you can't soak up time. You can't keep going just because you want to. But thank you.
And then after saying that, she looks at someone, I can't tell by the structure of the room who, and just gives a huge grin. And I don't know what point that served, except to really play into the conservative elements. And I said this again months ago, that they were going to try to pit Julia and Tanya against each other. And Tanya just doesn't seem to grasp the political lane that she's in and the coalitions that she needs to be a part of, and why she willingly, unprompted, decide to, you know, kind of hit and scold Julia like that is beyond bizarre. And I don't also get the smirk afterwards, but this is the drama. This is the tension. This is what we're left with when lost Ricardo, who, again, for all the faults, I've made them very clear what they are, had a lot of institutional knowledge, had a lot of just intellectual legitimacy. We had Kendra, who was just incredible in dragging a lot of these mediocre, a lot of these moderate liberal progressives, drag them kicking and screaming to vote the right way. When you kind of lose those two, and all you really have is Julia on an island isolating this one politically coherent lane, and everyone else is kind of just doing their own internal things. Again, I really don't get what Tanya's doing. It leads to Julia just being so frustrated the entire process. But, I mean, stay in the lane you're in. I strongly believe, as one of the only coherent left voices on the council, that at-large seat is safe and it is yours. So keep up what you're doing. Now, as I mentioned before, I would have voted for the amendment. Eventually, this passes with the three white conservatives, Fitzpatrick, Flynn, Murphy, them voting against it, and Julia and Tanya voting present. Again, Julia's comment on voting present was very much because she wanted that community input element. She wanted that board. Tanya, you know, she stated that, you know, she is also voting present, I believe, for that purpose. And of course, you have the eight votes being really just everyone who's going to kind of just do whatever Michelle Wu wants them to do. That's a little bit of an unfair statement, especially where we have seen at times Rootsy go against Michelle, but, you know, Rootsy understands the political direction. She gets the dynamics. She's going to play along to get along. We also saw that with things like the BRIC funding, which quickly switched her vote over the moment that election was done, the moment Erin Murphy came within striking distance of that number one spot. And I think that's everything I wanted to say on it. This is by no means over, and by that I mean this long process of getting planning and development under the city's control, under more and more public and community input. I love to see that the Boston City Council still has some juice to it. Fantastic. I'm looking forward. This, you know, gives me more energy to keep an eye on them. And yeah, let's see how this shapes up. We might have actually a little bit of excitement. And if you want even more excitement, you head on to patreon.com/bostopiannews. My whole back catalog. Click on the City Council tab. You can learn a lot about these figures, the past and their histories. I will do updates for the new people soon. And of course, if you want to support the work that I do, every time I get a new member, a new Patreon subscriber, fills my heart with nothing but joy. Can't really express how much of a pick-me-up it is that people willingly contribute. You know, $4 a month, $8 a month, a cup of coffee or a beer is just a sign of support. Everything I do is free. And so really, it means so much to me. And again, if you can't afford it, I understand. Like, retweet, give me a review on Spotify or iTunes, whatever you can for the algorithm. All of it helps spread the message, not just of this program, not just of the importance of independent media, but of course, communism itself. And with that, take care. And as always, hope you have a great rest of your day.